Hey, Pitchless listeners. We are so excited to announce our new summer song contest. You have until August 31st to post an original song to your Instagram feed for the chance to win your very own interview on an episode of Pitchlist, plus some official merchandise and some one-on-one song feedback from Chris. That's me. All the details and rules are on our website and our social media platforms. So enter today. Hey everybody, Chris Lindsay here, and you're listening to Pitch List. Join us on a deep dive into the heart of what makes writing songs and making music so magical. Let's find out what makes songwriters tick, and along the way, remember why we love music. Welcome to Pitch List. Every now and then, you meet someone who you just know is poised for greatness. And our guest today, in my humble opinion, is one of those people. She's a natural storyteller, innately self-confessional, with an unassuming air. Her new EP is called I Got Here by Accident. It's due out August 13th, and it is fantastic. She pulls no punches about a difficult childhood that forced her to grow up fast, and how these skills have ultimately helped her career. Overall, she's a gem, the kind of person who has walked through the fire and come out shiny and sharp, ready to take on the world. I'm Chris Lindsay, and here's Kaylee Shore on Pitch List. Good morning. We've got another great guest coming to you on Pitch List. This is a young artist who is really starting to get a lot of attention. I'm excited to have her on the show. This is Kaylee Shore. Hey, Kaylee.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy we get to talk to you. Love talking to artists and writing artists, especially someone like you who's really starting to break through and get some really great stuff happening. I think the people listening to the podcast, this is where they live, and I know they're going to want to talk to you. Let's talk about from the beginning. You are from Portland, Maine. Is that right?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Awesome. Tell us about that.
Well, I just got to go back for the first time in a year and a half because of COVID. So I literally just got home like 2 days ago. And it's one of those places, I think this goes for a lot of hometowns, but it's one of those places that I definitely took for granted until I moved away and realized that, you know, there's so many special things there that most people don't get. And I definitely miss the ocean, being in Nashville for sure. I grew up like, well, there's a line in my new single Love Child, and it's like I was born 1200 feet from the ocean and 200 feet from a bar, which is actually exactly accurate. We googled it, but that's how close I grew up to it, and it's a beautiful place. There's a lot of art there, not a ton of music, and there weren't really enough opportunities for me to do what I wanted to do, so I had to move away, but it's very nice to go back and visit now.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area of the country. My wife and I got to go recently, and they're fond of the lobster roll up there.
Yes. Yeah. I actually got food poisoning because I didn't like oysters until I moved away. Mm-hmm. And so this was my first time going back since my taste changed and I started liking oysters. So I had me and my boyfriend had about 100 in a 3 day period. And it was the last batch that took us down. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I think just from a law of averages standpoint, it was going to happen, but
good Lord. There's your cautionary tale. I don't get involved with raw oysters because I have like food phobias, but my wife had some recently. We were in Bayhead, New Jersey, and she tried some. So you've been in Nashville for a while, right?
Coming up on 9 years.
Right on. So, when you first moved here, did you talk to us about your experiences in the Nashville writing community? I'm sure you got involved and started co-writing. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So I had been writing songs since I was 6 years old. And then I was in middle school bands and, you know, we'd co-write together and whatnot. But my first co-writing experiences ever were in Nashville. And I love the collaborative aspect of it. I do write songs by myself all the time, but there's something really special about getting that immediate feedback and like having to sit there with another person and just dig deep. And I feel like I get two different parts of myself when I have someone challenging me. But those first few co-writes were really scary because it's just everything you know about songwriting is, it's just completely flipped on its head because you bring another person into it. And also like, I didn't know any of the people because I didn't know any people, period. So I was just going into these writing rooms completely blind, trying to, you know, make people take me seriously as an 18-year-old girl in cowboy boots. And sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. But I ended up finding a really great group of people, and a lot of them I still write with to this day, my first, like, earliest friends in Nashville. And it was like a crash course in songwriting. And a lot of people ask me, like, you know, about going to college for music or whatever. And I think everybody has a different path. I personally didn't go to school. I just kind of cut right to the songwriting part of it. But I think that just sitting in the room with the right people can be its own sort of education. And so I think I went to the school of writing rooms.
Well, and there's really something to be said for that. I have a 19-year-old son, and we're having that conversation right now. So I imagine when you first started writing, you would get in a room. Were you getting some Taylor Swift comparisons? Were they kind of trying to push you in that area or not really recognizing who you were? Did that happen?
For sure. And I think that was kind of a weird era in Nashville where that was happening to everybody.
Right.
Where it's like, if you, like, any girl came to town, God forbid she has curly hair and is wearing a sundress, it's like, oh, she's Taylor Swift. And it's like, honestly, I was not great at 18. So, like, don't insult Taylor Swift like that.
I bet you were pretty good. That's funny, though. That's good. Yeah. That's funny.
I mean, you know, it's just like, you still get that. I mean, there's been times I've been playing shows and there's been like a little 3-year-old girl there who sees someone with a guitar and they legitimately think I'm Taylor Swift. And so I'm not going to ruin it for little Joya in Cedar Rapids, right, Michigan, because she will tell everybody at school she met Taylor Swift and, you know, they won't.
Well, but, and you know, it's, but it, I know, and it, but it, it is, I've watched it. It is frustrating because it's just human nature to want to repeat something that's successful, regardless the fact that everyone's their own person and everyone is completely different, really. And, you know, And the fact that it's not going to work twice the same way anyway. It would be a huge mistake to sort of emulate a big artist because there's only one of them. You know, you need to be your own person and your own identifiable person. But it's shocking how many rooms you can get in with professionals where they're just like, oh, my God, I've got my Taylor and we're going to make her sound just like Taylor. And it's like, well, that's not, you know.
Well, and then the funny thing is when you get in a room with someone, like I was able to write with Liz Rose recently, and Liz Rose had Taylor was her Taylor, and she won't try to make you sound like Taylor Swift.
No,
you know what I mean?
Like, because she's smart,
right? Because she knows. The beautiful thing about her is she knows how to bring out the best in every artist. And I just have never, that was a masterclass in and of itself, just sitting there writing a song with her. And that was a super cool thing.
Yeah, she's really great. She is really great. So your EP that you've got out, and we're going to come back to your EP toward the end, but Butch Walker produced it. I'm curious, where did you guys record? Did you record in New York or in Nashville?
In Nashville. So he's actually been here through most of the pandemic. He is between here and LA, but they have a big farm south of Nashville. And it was just a lot better for him and his wife and son to have the space. And, you know, but so he has a studio there. I feel like calling it a home studio feels a little bit reductive. It's a giant like barn studio, and the way it worked out was like we were just both, I think he was like half vaccinated and I hadn't gotten vaccinated yet, so we just both took a COVID test and we ended up really just doing the project, the two of us. I think the only other person who came in the studio at any point was his wife to come hang out. That was it. And he played every instrument on it, and it was just made in this beautiful barn with these stained glass windows, and just the two of us hanging out making music. And like, he's my idol, so to be able to make music like that in such a calm environment, like I was able to really soak up what it was like to work with him, which was cool. There was no like hustle and bustle and studio like stuff happening and session musicians and assistants and managers. It was literally just me asking him questions, which was dope.
That's really great. So he's a multi-instrumentalist, and so he played everything. That's amazing.
Yeah. Even the drums, and there's nothing programmed on it either. There's one thing that sounds like it's a synth, but it's actually a guitar pedal. So everything on there's, yeah.
Well, and it feels organic. It feels great. And that I love it, but that seems to be the trend these days. People want to record with real instruments. They don't like click tracks. They don't like tuning, which is just so great because we went through a 10-year period where it was required to do those things, you know?
Totally. And I mean, I've always felt I was prepared going in to work with Butch because I've loved his music since I was 11. So that is over 15 years of being obsessed with him. And, you know, you have your heroes on these pedestals, and I kind of do firmly believe in the don't meet your heroes thing. There's a couple people I've actively avoided because I've heard they're not nice people, and I'd like to still listen to their records every day. We won't say who, but there's like,
I've got a couple myself. Yes, that's a wise plan.
There's just one lead singer of a band that I have like actively avoided meeting.
Wait a minute. I'm not going to get you to say it, but I am going to have to push a little bit. And you idolize this person or the band, or you love their music.
Yeah, so much. And everyone I know is like not like he's like, it's not like a total piece of shit situation, but just to like, he's going to be weird and you might not have fun because he's kind of a dick. And I'm like, all right, cool. Then we're just going to not meet this guy. So anyways, I was really prepared for anything with Butch because I have him on such a pedestal. And I was like, you know, I was preparing myself not for him to be a mean person, but for us to have clashing work styles. So I really prefer to, because I co-produced my album Open Book, and then this EP was just Butch producing it. And it was kind of fun to take my hands off and like just enjoy watching him do it. It was a really cool process. But I prefer to do a vocal, like do 2 to 5 takes all the way down and then pick the best one, which I find is almost always the second or third. After that, you're just trying to beat out the second take, which everybody knows is the first one anyways, but there's this one thing you don't like, but that could actually end up being what makes it the most like personal. Because I want the vocals to sound like the person's in the room with me and they're hearing me talk, and it's not over processed. It's not about being perfect. It's not about, there's just so many things you can nitpick with a vocal. And so I just try to not do that at all and just pick the one that I feel like says the most. And I was prepared for him to do the opposite, which is where you take it line by line and whatever, because I just didn't want to set myself up for disappointment. And we are so compatible work-wise, it like blew my mind. And so it was this really cool process of just, you know, doing these vocals, and it felt like almost too easy. I was like, is that all we need to do today? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, so it's done? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, when did we do it?
That's great.
Yeah,
that's so great. Now when you say second or third pass, are you you're taking the whole vocal top to bottom, pass 2, pass 3? That's great. Yeah. You know, you're smart, because I've worked on a few records, and sometimes a singer wants everything perfect and they're wanting to clip out pieces, and sometimes it's necessary. But a lot of times, like you said, those human things that may not be exactly perfect are what make a performance great and make you vulnerable. And you got to, some singers will take that right out, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I find that there's things, because I don't really consider myself a perfectionist. There is stuff that I'll go in and I'll like, you know, really, really try to like line it up and make sure everything's perfect. But I think the two things I've learned to be more hands-off with are my vocal and what I look like in pictures, because my opinion of those things are always going to be a little bit skewed. So when it comes to picking like a cover art, I'm like, okay, I like these 5, pick the one you think I look best in, because that's kind of, I guess, more what matters, because whatever I think of my face is not what everybody else thinks of it. So these are the ones I want, pick one.
Well, again, that's smart. You're so smart to say that, because it's like, right, give this to someone you trust. That's just like people who are going to view you. They're going to have the best, exactly, you know, unbiased opinion. And I think that can sometimes be true for your songs and everything. Do you have people that, do you have people you trust musically who you kind of rely on to tell you what's best of what you do?
Yeah. So my, I really end up being friends and hanging out with mostly artists or creatives or songwriters. It's hard to kind of, it's hard sometimes to maintain friendships because this is all I care about. Like my hobby is my career, mm-hmm. is my passion, is my interest, is all I, everything I consume from like nonfiction books to music to podcasts is almost always around music. And if it's not, it's some sort of weird conspiracy theory thing. So that's about it. And yoga and animals. That's what I like. So, I'm like very lucky. My best friend, Candy Carpenter, who I wrote Amy on the EP with, and then a bunch of my album Open Book. I trust her opinion so much. And she's really great because, you know, she understands what it's like to be a female artist and just an artist in general, not even gender, but knowing what it's like to have to sort of separate yourself as a person from yourself as a brand and like look at things from the bigger picture and make those awkward decisions where you're looking at yourself like a business. And then my boyfriend's also an artist and writer too. And he has, it's so funny. And like, I always like, he had one suggestion for one of the songs on the EP and I was so hesitant to go to Butch and be like, my boyfriend thinks that this sounds like, but like, I'd really talk to him about it. And I was like,
that's great.
And so I was like a little bit nervous, but when I mentioned it to Butch, he was like, that is such a good idea. We have to do that. And so now like Sam is so excited because it was this little like drum beat thing in one of the songs that I wrote with Sam. But it's cool to have people who's, I love both of their music. I love Sam and Candy's music. So of course I respect their opinion on mine. And I also write my music with them. So it's a nice little, you know, peanut gallery to get to ask questions every once in a while.
That's awesome. Here's a question for you. So you've been in Nashville for a while, and I'm kind of curious. Was there a point where you wrote songs for country pitches? Did you ever do that, or were you always focused on your career and what you might record?
I've actually probably from a like just livelihood standpoint, I think writing for other people has been more lucrative for me than almost anything outside maybe touring. But when I moved here, I wasn't immediately concerned with being an artist. I knew I had a long way to go with that. And I knew I needed to play shows and work on my voice and figure out what I wanted to say. But I knew I loved writing songs. And so the first year or two of writing songs here, I wasn't going in and being like, we're writing for my project. I was writing for other people or writing for, you know, pitch or just trying to write a good song, you mm-hmm. know? That's what that first 2 years is it's like, okay, maybe this song doesn't do anything, but every single one's a lesson in like how to do it when it's go time. And when I started doing Song Suffragettes, which is this all female writers round that happens at the Listening Room in Nashville. It's expanded from, you know, five girls on stage once a week to a community of like 300 women who've played. And we have this Facebook group, and that's how I've met so many of my friends. And so getting plugged into that was so amazing because it gave me this built-in friend group and community and people to write with because I didn't go to college. So I was like, how do I meet people? I can't even go out and order a beer. I'm 18 years old. I had no idea where to start. And so, but the thing about that is I was hanging out with all other artists. So when we'd write, we'd end up writing for, you know, one of us. So I was learning how to write for myself and learning how to write for other people at the exact same time. And I'm really glad because I love the process of writing with other people. I love being able to step into somebody else's story and step into somebody else's voice. Like I write with Mickey Guyton, and we have this one song called Work It Out that she played on the Opry, which was really cool. But getting to try on her vocal, like I don't have a voice like that, but I can like write for a voice like that. And it's so mm-hmm. fun because you're like, wait, we can write all the way up there. That's cool. Let's like push that. And I love the process of just getting to know somebody. And I'm always the writer who will go in with an artist for the first time and just ask them like so many personal questions.
Yeah, but it's great.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to. That's part of it. And it's a weird part of the job that you just meet someone and within 10 minutes, you're just delving into the most traumatic thing that ever happened to them.
100%.
It's a weird, it's strange.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's so cool though. And I'm not a small talk kind of person. It's, mm-hmm. I don't really, I mean, everybody has the weather app on their phones. Why do we need to talk about it? You know, right.
That's good.
We know what it's going to be. Like, there's just, but I love challenging myself to get to know people like that in any situation. And I found that, you know, meet and greets are always a great way to get to know people and like really quickly and hear so many stories, especially about like how people connect to your music. But I guess what, to answer your question, is very long-winded, but like writing for other artists and writing for myself was always happening simultaneously. And I don't know if there's really a beginning or end for any of it. I just like writing songs. I love writing songs. It's kind of all I care about. And, you know, there's something special about writing your own story, but there's also something really special about helping somebody tell their own as well.
Yeah. And it just, I think it makes you a better writer. The more you write and expanding your sort of universe into other styles, other, like you said, other melodies, it just stretches you. It just makes you a stronger writer, even if it's for yourself. I mean, I think it's great.
The two like biggest cuts I had last year was one with this pop artist named Upsol called People I Don't Like, and it's this really dark pop record. It's really cool. It's gotten some really cool placements, and I think it just hit like 30 million streams or something. And then I also had like a song on Yellowstone, so it's like this super country song, and they just like could not be any more different. Like Upsol's kind of like Billie Eilish vibes, and then Yellowstone is like cowboys, and I love that. I love that I get to do that, because with my artist project I have to be, you know, figure it out, and there has to be some sort of consistency, and it's not hard to do that, but it's really nice to get to dip my toes into other places via other artists.
That's awesome. I love Yellowstone.
Yeah. I've been into acting my whole life, but during quarantine, that was really all my agency had for me to do. So I ended up doing a ton of auditions for TV and film and voiceover acting. So I can do a lot of cartoon voices now. But I actually auditioned for the lead role of the like the girlfriend in Yellowstone for this past season, and I didn't get it, but I came so close. But I got a song on it, so all's well that ends well.
That's awesome. Did you wear a pair of Wrangler jeans into the audition?
It was all self tapes because of quarantine, but I did wear. I think it was a Wrangler flannel. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I really did. Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah. What about cartoon voices? Tell us about that. That I don't think we've interviewed anyone on the podcast. Is that something you work on, or have you just always been good at that? Or
I think I have a pretty naturally raspy voice, and that comes over well on, you know, podcast, because I have my own podcast on that and any sort of voiceover acting, and so I'd always get these like tough, scrappy girls who are like, you know, from the wrong side of the cartoon tracks kind of things. I remember one, I auditioned for an Aquaman cartoon, and I was like a little tiny shrimp and had to have this super high pitched thing. And I was just like, hey guys, like just stuff like that. It was a fun quarantine challenge. We'll see how that side of my career pans out, but
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this. We love to talk about it on the podcast. Adversity, tough times. Was there any point in your career since you started young, when you moved here, before you moved here, where you really felt like it was going to be tough to do what you did? You have times, or have you always been pretty steady, knew what you were doing and moving toward it and not ever getting sidetracked?
I think it's always been both. For me, like from day one, I had a really tough childhood. I grew up just as unconventionally as possible. And I just got home. So the older I get, the more I like look at my childhood and I'm like, oh, none of that was normal at all. Okay, cool. Let's write that down for therapy. But I never, even though like so much of it was hard from the fact that like I grew up like in very extreme poverty to, you know, my dad was kind of in and out, and I have like my siblings have struggled with addiction, and it was very messy, but I always saw that and used it as something to push me forward. And I was, sometimes when I look back at my younger self, I feel like she was more mature than I was. And maybe it was like a Benjamin Button thing where she was like setting me up for this life. And because the things I did when I was a teenager to get myself here to Nashville were so like, I'm like, how did I know to do that? How did I think of that? But I was so focused on music. And I don't think that there was a part of me that questioned whether or not I could do it. I knew that I wasn't the best. I knew I had to work hard to get there, but I knew I had something to say. I thought people might give a shit about hearing it. And I used like every bad thing that happened to just kind of push me further. And I think it's probably because it was easy to leave my hometown. I really wanted to start over and I really wanted to have some control of my own life. I lived on my own my senior year of high school, which was weird. And I worked full time while I finished high school. So I was working like 40 to 60 hours a week while I was finishing school. And I just like had this one track mind. So no matter how much noise was happening outside of me, like obviously, you know, trauma is trauma and it hurt, but I was so focused that like, I don't think anything could have really stopped me. And, you know, there's been hard times in Nashville where I've been like, you know, am I supposed to be doing this? But this has never been songwriting. Like I'm supposed to be doing music. This is all I'm going to do. I don't really believe that there's another path for me. The only thing I ever questioned was like, should I just keep writing songs for other people? Like, am I forcing the artist thing? That's right. The only moments I've ever had. And I've quickly talked myself out of them. So,
wow. Well, maybe is it possible that you were so mature young because you had to be, right? Or
oh, for like
you
sure. said,
you're working in a senior in high school to pay your rent.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I also was having a conversation with a friend the other day about how like, you know, this is my mid-20s were the first time I ever felt like a kid. Like I was going through, you know, this really bad breakup. I'd been with someone for 6 years who I moved to Nashville with, but I also, as sad as it was, I felt so free. And I was like going out and, you know, drinking too much and kissing frogs and all that stuff that you do. But I was like, oh my God, I feel my age for the first time in my life. This is amazing. I'm making so many mistakes. And yeah, definitely like a little bit of a Benjamin Button trajectory, but yeah, it's hard, but I also, it pushed me to music because I didn't have words for what I saw happening around me, but I did have songs that knew how to say it. And I was drawn to really sad songs like really early. And my dad always tells a story about when I was 6 years old, maybe five, I was in the backseat of the car and he was playing Last Kiss by Pearl Jam. Do you know that song?
Yep.
Yeah. About the car accident. Gut-wrenching.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I do.
Beautiful song. And he's playing it just driving down the road and he turns around and I'm in the back seat like sobbing. And he thought I was like hungry or needed to use the bathroom or something. He's like, are you okay? And I was like, it's just so sad. He's like, you're a weird kid.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Pitch List will be right back. The Nashville Scene is running their annual Best of Nashville Awards, and we need your help to win Best Podcast. Visit www.bestofnashville2021.com. One more time, www.bestofnashville2021.com to cast your ballot now through September 6th. Just click on the Media and Politics category, find Best Podcast, and write in Pitch List. Thanks, everybody. So I have a question, and I'm going to come off sounding dumb, but I think anyone listening to your music might ask, do you consider yourself a country artist?
I think I've done country projects. I think yes. I also think I consider myself other types of artists as well. I think that at this point in, you know, music, genre matters most to people in the industry. It doesn't really matter so much to fans and it doesn't really matter so much to artists. And it's necessary. I don't think that we should just like throw out genre. It's important. The Spotify algorithm is how people find my music. So knowing that they like other country rock acts is helpful. But I think with this EP, I respect country music so much. I have gotten to play the Opry like over 20 times, maybe 25 at this point. I think you get a special gift when you play 25. So that'll be fun.
That's amazing, by the way.
Keep flowers. Going. Yeah, but so I love, love, love country music and I respect it so much. And so even if I'm going outside to other genres and creating music in those lanes, to me, it doesn't feel that much different than having this dark pop song and this Yellowstone song the same year. And I, because I respect it so much, I wasn't going to slap a banjo on these songs just to call it country. I think Love Child definitely appeals to a country audience, especially with the storytelling, but Amy is not a country song, and I wasn't going to try to fool anybody with that because that's stupid. And also, my fans don't really care what I call it. If it's being targeted to the wrong people who listen to just pure straight country, they're not going to like it. So why do I want them to find it anyways? You know, that's not their thing, and that's totally okay. I think that I just, because I respect it, I didn't want to call this project country, but it's not like me being like, I'm leaving country behind. I'm no longer a country artist. I'm not going to go to country award shows or whatever. It's just me doing something different at this time, seeing what happens.
I love your answer. I think you're 100% right. The fans don't give a crap what genre you might fall into. They fall in love with you. They fall in love with your music and how it makes them feel. And I also need to say, there was no judgment in my question.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean? It was like, well, I was feeling bad listening to you. I'm like, well, maybe she thinks I thought it wasn't country. I mean, I think the genre thing is kind of falling away, and I think it's good. That's what
I think another, even more like perplexing to me than the genre conversation, because I do think there's a purpose for that, is when people like ask you who you sound like, and I'm like, my answer is always an amalgamation of like five people and then some other adjectives thrown in, which I feel like is a healthy answer. But if you can be like, I'm like this person, it's like, well, you should probably add in a couple other things so you're not just like that person, copy and paste it. Like, the music industry feels a lot like a 3D printer sometimes, and I don't think it's the artist's fault. I think it's the team's fault trying to, because I've been pushed in those directions for sure, where people have been like, oh, well, this person's doing this, you should write this kind of thing because it's working on the radio. And I was like, okay, I'll try writing it. And then I was like, I don't want to sing this song. And I just don't, I don't sing anything I don't want to sing, which is a very freeing concept.
And smart. But, because if it's concocted, it's not from the heart. If it's not from the heart, I don't know if it will work anyway. So it's a self-defeating thing to try to make music you don't really love.
I think it's almost insulting to your audience sometimes as well.
Yeah.
You put out something that's so blatantly inauthentic, because it's like people pick up on that so easily. I mean, you have to. It's actually kind of a survival instinct to pick up on when somebody's lying to you. And obviously, you know, music is a small scale lie, but you're still kind of being a little dishonest. And I was doing an interview the other day, and they were talking about how my songs are super autobiographical and like if all of the words are true. And I'm like, yeah, they are. I don't think it will always be that way, but I'm never going to exaggerate a story and then act like it happened to me if it didn't. Because truthfully, I feel like my life is so crazy, I don't really need to make things up at this point, but there's plenty of things to go off of. But people can tell when you're like singing about an emotion you've never felt. And I have always found that I played around with somebody. This is an extreme example, but I played around with somebody one time, and it was right after my sister had passed away. And they played a song and were like, I don't know what it's like to lose somebody, but I imagine it's really hard. So I wrote this song about it. And I was just sitting up there like, why would you kill somebody in a song? Why would you make that up? That just exists. That's really sad. And I don't really want to hear somebody's thoughts on something they've never been through that's that heavy to that extent. And I just remember sitting up there and I was just like, I need a tequila shot, like right now. And I think that if you just stick to what you know, everybody has an interesting story. And also, not everybody has to write like dark, traumatic, angsty songs in order to be interesting. Like, I think that there's so much to a really lovely love song for somebody who only knows what it feels like to be in love. Write that. That's something that a lot of people don't have. So tell that story. Or if you had a happy childhood, please tell that story, because people need to know that that exists too. And I think it's just, it all comes from feeling pressured to sound a certain way because something's working. And yeah.
Yeah. And usually around here, what working means is working on radio. And what radio means is they don't know any other way to effectively market your record other than radio, although that's transitioning now and the labels are catching up to where they understand it's a streaming world. But I also think that your generation runs like hell from inauthentic music, lyrics, anything. They don't, that they're all about that. I mean, it's like, not only would it not work, they'll run away from it with their hair on fire. They don't want any, just watching my children, they don't want anything to do with that. You know, they they need it that way. And it's really great. I think the whole thing's great for music. There was a lot of manufactured artists, a lot of manufactured material that went on for years in country music and in pop. And it it wasn't real, and it was a marketed product, you know.
Well, and also, I mean, like, true, because that was really big in pop around the era of Britney Spears, and like there were parts of her that were completely manufactured and made by other people. But the reason why everybody is gathered around her and loves her is because she's finally speaking her truth because she's able to, and it's so clear that that was like out of her control. And now, you know, Britney is more loved and respected than she ever has been. And it's not because somebody put together this glossy, perfect image. It's because she's like, hey, I'm a real person and people are hurting me.
Yeah. And she also, as an example, she would not fall to me in the category of manufactured. Her vocals always had a vulnerability. Her fans, including my wife, who's a huge fan, they've always loved her. And there was something not made, you know. The music was dance music, but there's always been something about Britney Spears that was not manufactured and was real. And I think that's why she got so big.
I think that's also why people thought something was wrong, though, because what I'm referring to is the songs that you can clearly tell somebody else told her to do. And that's also like, that's why people could pick up on Britney, because they knew when it was something real and then when it was somebody else controlling her and telling her what to say, whether it was through her songs or her videos or whatever, they were like, that's not right. And that's how people figured out Britney wasn't okay. And it's just fascinating. She's a fascinating person. I mean, that's the truth too. It's like, some people just have that thing that makes you care about what they have to say. And Britney's absolutely one of them. And I'm so happy that she's, that's like such a sad story. I feel like that's the one thing that's united our country, is everybody wants Britney to be out of her conservatorship.
It's true. I'm not laughing. I mean, it's true. You know, I heard somebody say one time, and it's a weird thing to say, but I think it's somewhat true. You know, normal people aren't that compelling on stage. You know, people with trauma and real problems, you can see it in their face, you know, you can in their vibe, and like, well, now there are examples. Taylor blows that whole theory, but in general, I think it is compelling to see a performer who's somewhat either broken or been broken and healed themselves, or has that kind of humanity.
I think the irony of Taylor Swift is that the music industry and being famous is her trauma. You know, like she came in shiny and like with these loving parents and, you know, just with being a prolific writer. But the reason her stories hit so hard now is because that girl knows what it feels like to be hated by an entire planet. For no reason. I love her.
I love her too. Much. That's a great point, man. That is such a great point. That I've never, you're that's smart, man. I might steal that one. The music business is her trauma, her brokenness. Because it's, you know, it's a rough ride.
Homegirl was just trying to date at 19. I mean, she was just going on dates with people. And then it turns into this whole culture of like, she's a skank. And it's like, I'm sorry. Do you know how many dates I went on the year I turned 23?
Yeah. It is.
So many.
Yeah. It could, you know, and that just was absolute bullshit. Absolute bullshit. But anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about you.
I could talk about Taylor and Britney all day. Yeah,
well, I could too. I'm not as huge on Britney, but I love Taylor. I've always, tell us about your podcast. That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. So I started the podcast. It was in the works before COVID and then ended up being kind of a saving grace during it because it gave me something to freaking do. It took a while because we were like negotiating the contract with iHeartRadio, and then they had to reschedule all of their events like all of them because COVID had just hit. And so it pushed back like the podcast by like 3 or 4 months because the legal department was completely tied up with that. So that was an interesting little trickle down effect of that. But Bobby Bones just reached out to me one day with his producer, Mike, and was like, hey, you seem to have a lot of opinions and we would like you to share them loudly. And I was like, that sounds fun. That's cool. And basically, you know, as we were talking about it and getting the podcast ready, I was like, well, what do you want me to do? Like, do you want me to have guests on? Do you want me to have, like, what do you want me to do? He's like, I don't know, just find something that you're really, like, passionate about that week and just talk about it for 20 minutes. And I was like, that's fun. So sometimes it's, like, whatever stupid drama is going on in my life. Other times it's animal testing. I have a new one coming up on the family behind the opioid epidemic. So it is just completely all over the place.
Wow. So that's, like, straight news. Like,
yeah. That's great. Or sometimes it's just, you know, what I did that week or a story about, you know, a particular point in my life. Or, like, I did one on songwriting. And I actually had a very funny realization that involves you, but I was singing some of the songs I wrote when I was like 9, because I have this notebook. And I just did like little acapella versions of them to show people how ridiculous my old songs were. And one of them is called Mother at 14. And I knew it reminded me of something. And then I looked up the lyrics to Backseat of a Greyhound Bus, and I completely ripped that off at 9 years old, like just unashamedly wrote this song about this. It's like, she sits down on the curb in front of the bus stop. This is her ticket to freedom. Cause I always look back on that song. I'm like, where did I come up with that? Was I watching a Lifetime movie? No, I was listening to Sarah Evans in the car with my sister and decided to write the worst ripoff of Backseat of a Greyhound Bus ever.
It's still flattering. It's still flattering. That's awesome. I've always loved that song that I wrote with Amy and Hillary Lindsay. I think Troy Burgess was on that too. Yeah. We used to do a writing thing once a week, like on a Tuesday night, and we would do it at like 7 or 8 and write till, and then I made apple martinis for Hillary and Amy.
Love.
And then we would go till 12 or 1 and really just get hammered. And that was one of those songs that came out of that. But I think it, and the idea of those writing sessions would just kind of go for it, you know.
So was that before or after you were married to Amy? Like, did you guys meet writing songs together?
We did meet writing songs. And yeah, we were well married. We had 2 kids at that point. We met in, we go way back. We met in 1994 at the Bluebird.
Cute.
How about that for a cliche?
I really love being able to write with my boyfriend, and we just moved in together in this little music room. So it's got metal plaques, his guitars.
Yeah,
it's fun. But it's just, you know, it's like the same thing I said about my best friend Candy being an artist, is just having somebody. It's not like we sit around and talk about work all the time, but we also do, you know.
Yeah, no, we do. We still do. But we need to say this. Too Much to Say with Kaylee. That's your podcast, right?
That's my podcast. Sorry. Okay. I'm here. Look, I'm interviewing you. I can't.
Yes, you started to, which, you know.
Well, I think that hosting, so I also kind of got into the hosting world by, I did some red carpet correspondence for Radio Disney and Perez Hilton, and I would go on red carpets and interview the artists. And I started doing that, and then it slowly led to me hosting stages at CMA Fest. And then from there, I got a radio show on Radio Disney, and I was there up until they closed in February. And then after that, got the podcast. So I've been doing a lot of things of that nature. But I think the reason why I know how to interview people is because I know how I don't like to be interviewed. And I think I know how to write with artists because I know the way that I don't like when I don't like to be written with.
I get it. I totally get it. That's totally great.
Interview the way you would like to be interviewed, you know?
Yes. I try the exact same thing. So here's,
you do a great job.
Yeah. I thank you. Here's a total digression, but have not been able to stop thinking about it since you said it. What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
Ooh, okay.
We won't go down the rabbit hole. Just give me an overview, like your favorite or one of your favorite ones.
What is my favorite conspiracy Not that you believe it,
but that you're fascinated with.
I'm not like a QAnon conspiracy theory guy. I'm more about like ancient origins kind of stuff. Okay. I'm really into the concept of like the early Sumerians, like being really technologically advanced, mm-hmm. and the language and like all this Sumeria stuff. And so during COVID, I would just binge watch this show called Ancient Origins, which itself has very questionable origins. I'm not sure how they're like, this is an expert. I'm like, yeah, but what qualifications? And yeah. They're like, this is an expert. That's all you need to know. I'm like, all right. So I just would sit back and drink Negronis and watch this show about, you know, ancient Sumerian gods creating super people. Yeah. And then aliens, just from a law of averages standpoint, like I'm a logical person. I'm like, yeah. You know how big the universe is. You know how absolutely absurd it would be if we were the only cells that evolved into
It's absolutely statistically impossible that mm-hmm. the universe is not teeming with life. It's impossible.
Yeah. And I read a lot of, I really love like science fiction and stuff, but I also like, I don't know what the genre would be, like poetic science fiction, like Tom Robbins and Kurt Vonnegut and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And Sirens of Titan is a great novel. That's like this beautifully crafted lyrical novel about, you know, space and stuff like that. Also, like I love reading books to get song ideas too.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. That's a great tip.
Yeah. There's this one author too. If there's any songwriters listening, she wrote this song called Conversations with Friends. I'm trying to look up the artist or the Sally Rooney. And she has this book called Normal People and one called Conversations with Friends. And I had someone I wrote with be like, hey, if you're stuck on ideas, read this person because she writes so conversationally. And those books are just like full of inspo. So if you get stuck, if you get writer's block or whatever, read some Sally Rooney and you'll be on your way out.
Wow. Well, let's talk about, I mean, first of all, I could talk to you. We could keep this going for 3 hours, but I know you're busy. But I would love to. I'd love to get another cup of coffee and keep going. But I want to talk about, you have a new EP coming out August 13th. Is that right?
Yes.
And it's called Got Here by Accident.
Yes. I Got Here by Accident. Yeah. It's from a lyric in Love Child, which is literally just like an autobiography. And it's like, my daddy came here on a boat. My mama came here on a plane. I got here by accident, but God don't make mistakes, or God doesn't make mistakes. And my parents are both, my dad's a German immigrant. My mom was born in France because her dad was in the army. So it's about that. And then me being a total oops baby because they had me in their 40s. And then I just realized that so much of things I wrote about for that EP and including the genre shift were all totally accidental. But sometimes some of the best things that can happen to you and the most life-changing moments are the things you absolutely don't plan for. And I thought that was a fun title for it. It took me a long time to think of the title for this one, though.
Yeah, well, I love it. I love it.
Thank you.
And Love Child, you can see now. You can listen now. I listened to it last night a couple of times. It's fantastic. Is that the only thing released from the EP yet?
No, Love Child. And then technically the first single was a song called Amy, which went viral on TikTok earlier in the year.
Yep.
Yeah. So that went viral on TikTok in January. So that was the first song Butch and I did. We kind of had to rush it out because of the momentum it had. And we included it on the EP because it was supposed to be on it at that point, but it took a longer to get the EP out. So it's like a 6-month EP promo cycle, but Love Child's like the first one that we intentionally did and didn't have to like bum rush and throw together, you know?
Wow. How did Amy happen like that? What was the process that got it going viral?
Well, an accident, to be completely honest. That's also part of the title. I just posted a video on TikTok. I had like maybe 10,000 followers at that point on TikTok, which compared to the rest of my socials was not really, like, I was just kind of throwing stuff up on there, getting like, you know, I'd post funny videos and get like maybe a couple 100,000 views. But I uploaded Amy and my boyfriend had told me to do it. I was like, hey, which song should I upload? And he was like, I don't know. I think you should post Amy. And I was like, okay. And I had no idea I was going to do anything. And I was with Candy, my best friend who I wrote it with. And we were trying to write another song. And then I'm looking at my phone and I was like, hey, every time I refresh this, I'm getting another like 1,000 views. And then it was like, 2000. And then it was just going up. And we were like, I don't think we should write. I think we should go to a bar and toast and just watch the numbers go up. And it just like flew up. I think it was like 1 million the next day.
Wow.
Yeah. TikTok moves so fast. The algorithm is so specific to the person. So it's a great way to connect to your audience because they know who wants to see your videos. And it was a crazy thing. I also didn't know how interested people would get in the drama behind the song. There truthfully isn't much more to it. I put all of it in the song. So people were like, well, what's the real story? I'm like, I told you literally everything. It's took me 3 minutes. You can listen to it again if you want. And they're like, well, who's Amy? I'm like, I'm absolutely not going to tell you that. So that was pretty crazy. And I heard from a lot of people because the song's about a former best friend of mine, starting to hook up with my ex-boyfriend immediately after we broke up. And I heard from so many people who'd been in that exact same situation, including this one girl who was like, my mom's name is Amy and she was my Amy. And she hooked up with my boyfriend right after we broke up.
Whoa.
I know. Whoa. And I was like, I need to write a song about that. That's some real drama. Wow. That's not, I know. TikTok's crazy. It is the Wild West, and the comment section on any video is going to be a ride.
I think that's so interesting. So they really wanted to know exactly who Amy was.
Yeah, and then there were radio
stations. Did they start to guess?
Oh, yeah. People did some math. They went all the way back on my Instagram, found who my ex-boyfriend was, all this stuff. And yeah, you can find anything on the internet, but then like Bobby Bones was on his radio show, like speculating who it was. And then there was this big like rock syndicated radio show that was trying to guess. And then the comments were insane. And I was just sitting there and I was like, this feels like something that would only happen in the 90s. Like when was the last, I'm like, this is how Alanis Morissette felt about the Dave Coulier situation. It was a pretty crazy ride, but wow. Yeah. The thing is, like, I have a rule when it comes to writing angry songs like that involve somebody else. And it's if I'm going to put out a song that's that scathing, every single word has to be triple checked. It has to be true. There can't be any room. There's no space for exaggerating. There's no space for that. Like, it has to be completely accurate. Because if I'm going to roast somebody, I'm not going to put a lie out there. That's the difference. It's like,
right.
When you do something like that to somebody and you hurt them like that, that becomes their story too. So it's their right to share it. It's not their right to, you know, take it too far. So there's some things I left out of the song because I wasn't positive they happened. So people were like, you know, there were a couple people who were like, isn't this mean? And I was like, her doing that was mean. I write songs about everything. Like,
yeah, it's your life. It's your life. You can write about it. We were through this. My wife's book that's out now is a memoir. It's, you know, it's about her life. And there are some very tragic and difficult things that happened. And there are some people that did that, you know, so it had to be really fact checked for the same reason.
Yeah. I honestly, the truth is almost always ridiculous enough. You know, I'm sure I already added her book to my Amazon cart while you were telling that story. Awesome. Super excited to read it. Love the title, Living My Best Life in a Shit Show. Fun. I get that. But there's a song on my album Open Book called F.U. Forever that is also similar. It doesn't say any names, but it's a similar corner of my writing as Amy. Like, which is like angry and very like kind of in a humorous way, but really just like, you know, just straight up this is what happened, like very conversational and whatnot. And I heard from a friend that when my ex-boyfriend heard it, he said it was too literal, but he didn't say it was untrue. So I was like, yep, all right. I don't know. Yep.
Yeah, that's what you want. Now, and I've never done this on a podcast, and not everyone's going to be watching the Zoom of this, but I have to ask, on your left arm, you have a really interesting tattoo. Is that like a lamp or is there a meaning behind that? I've never seen that tattoo ever.
So it's a lantern. It's by this artist named Co Carina, and it's from a pack of tarot cards that I got in New York like a couple years ago. And I just love the artwork on it. Like the tarot cards are matte black and then they have this like gold, like all the like lettering and whatnot is gold. It's really pretty. And I kept pulling this one card when I was making my album called The Hermit. And it's about finding the light in yourself by being alone and how the answers are almost always inside you. And when I made Open Book, that was the first time in my life I'd ever been alone, because I went from living with my parents to being in a relationship and then moving in with a guy, like all in my 18th, 19th year. So I just never had that period of time where I lived alone and had to like discover myself and wasn't in a relationship and whatnot. And it was such an important period for me. And I was single for like 2 years, 3 years, almost 3 years before I got into a new relationship. And it was like some of the best time I could have possibly spent to get to know myself. But I thought that there was a reason that kept popping up. And it's also the same tarot card that's on the front of the Led Zeppelin 4 album. It's just a different interpretation of it. But yeah.
Love it. I love it. I love a tattoo with a story. I think that's really great. That, you know, has real meaning for people.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one other thing, because it's important. Where do you have any plans for touring, and where can people see you if they want to come out and see you? Are you going to do some live work, or tell us about that?
Yes. So I'm putting together my new full band set and just having fun diving back into that. The thing about this EP is all of the songs are just like they're just begging to be played live. They're full rock songs. You know, they're a four piece. So it's me, a drummer, a bassist, and another guitarist. And I'm so excited to do that. And I'm so excited I'm releasing it and having the opportunity to, because when I re-released my album Open Book Unabridged, I didn't get to have a release party or anything like that because it was dead pandemic. So I'm not taking this for granted at all, but I have four shows coming up in the Nashville area. August 13th is my fans only EP release show, which you can like enter to win tickets to.
Okay.
It's or like they'll tell you the location day of, and the concept is like I got here by accident. Get it?
Got it.
And then August 14th, I'm playing the Grand Ole Opry with Butch Walker, my producer. We're playing a couple of my songs, and then we're doing a duet of one of his songs, which I am like so excited about. And then August 17th, I'm co-headlining the High Watt with Dylan Rockoff and Ian McConnell's opening. And then August 21st, I'm playing the Ruby Gala HIV Epidemic charity fundraiser at Marathon Music Works. So
awesome. And somewhere in our notes, we will list all those dates. And for the record, I have to say that I have never, I want to point out that I ask you the question, are you a country artist? And you are working on 25 performances at the Grand Ole Opry. So
that's
one of the dumbest questions I've ever asked in my life.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think it is at all. I think it's just like, you know, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. And
okay. All right. I'm going to let myself off the hook. You know, just going through the songs that I had available on YouTube and on Spotify, you got a winning combination. And I love that you're doing so many different things. And I just think that when a human being has a lot to offer all the way around, like you do, and I'll quit kissing your butt in a second.
No, I love
like
it.
All the way around. When a human being is all the way around as interesting and well-read and interested in life as you, I think they have so much more to bring to their artistry, even in one slice of their life of being a musician and a singer. So, I'm going to end on that note. We could talk for way longer. Maybe we can have you back next season and sort of track your progress. I would love to do that.
That'd be fun.
And so I want to thank you. This is Kaylee Shore. You're listening to Pitch List, and we will see you soon. Thanks for listening to this episode of Pitch List, produced in partnership with the American Songwriter Podcast Network. If you enjoyed today's show, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcast or your preferred listening platform. And if you want, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and review. For exclusive content from this week's guest and more, you can visit our website at pitchlistpodcast.com or follow our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. To hear songs written and or recorded by today's guest, check out this week's playlist by finding us on Spotify at Pitch List Podcast. Plus, don't forget to let us know on social media what songwriter, musician, or music business professional you want to hear from next.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.